Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Brian Lynn and Anne Ball. Later, Kelly Jean Kelly will bring us the next part in the VOA Learning English series, America's Presidents. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
As China expands its influence in the disputed South China Sea, an arms race has developed among other nations with claims in the area. China claims most of the 3.5 million square kilometer South China Sea as its territory. Brunei, Malaysia, the Philippines,Taiwan and Vietnam also have claims in the waterway. The sea is rich in fisheries and is thought to hold valuable resources such as oil and natural gas. Since 2010, China has stepped up its military activities in the South China Sea.It has patrolled with Coast Guard ships and sent its aircraft carrier, the Liaoning, to carry out military drills. China has also deployed oil rigs and created artificial islands in the disputed sea. Satellite images appear to show the country has also constructed major military facilities.On some of the islands. Beijing has defended its activities in the South China Sea. Security experts believe Chinese Navy and Coast Guard expansion will continue. According to a report by global defense publication IHS Jane's Defense Weekly,China's defense budget is estimated to nearly double in 2020 from 2010 levels. The report said that by 2020, China's military budget is expected to reach $233 billion. This expansion has caused other countries in the region to build up arms to be able to counter possible Chinese threats. Zach Cooper is with the Center for Strategic and International Studies, or CSIS, a research group based in Washington, D.C.
Just to keep pace with that Chinese military modernization effort would require tremendous efforts by some of the South China Sea claimant states.
Overall, defense spending among other states surrounding the South China Sea is estimated to reach $250 billion by 2020, according to Jane's. In Malaysia, officials announced last November that the Royal Malaysian Navy plans to replace 50 aging vessels to protect its waters from regional threats.There have already been incidents involving Chinese ships entering Malaysian territorial waters. Malaysian officials have said the new littoral mission ships can also be used for anti-terrorism operations. Littoral mission ships are smaller vessels designed for conflicts happening closer to shores.Cooper said it is interesting to note that the first of Malaysia's new ships will actually be coming from China, the very nation the country could use the vessels against in possible conflicts.
I think this is highly problematic when you have a country that is worried about activities by another state, and they then go ahead and buy arms from that state. You have some worries about whether major platforms are going to work. That should still be a serious concern, I think, for Malaysian policymakers.
One South China Sea claimant with a large incentive to upgrade its military capabilities is Vietnam, according to Cooper.
The Chinese efforts to reclaim land at the Seven Features and the Spratlys directly threaten a large number of Vietnamese-held features. Plus, the ongoing dispute over resource exploitation near the Paracels is a huge concern for Vietnam.
Vietnam, along with other regional nations, is looking to cut defense costs and spend less on the military equipment it needs. This reportedly led Hanoi to consider buying surface-to-air missiles from India, which is looking to become a future world player in military exports. However, most military experts believe it will take years for India to become a large-scale global provider of high-end military equipment. Nations expected to provide new weapons to South China Sea claimants include Japan, South Korea, and Australia. Japan was the country of choice for the Philippines in a deal to lease two TC-90 training aircraft to support its maritime defense forces. The agreement is notable because it is the first transfer of equipment from Japan's self-defense forces to another country. The two planes, which reportedly recently arrived in the Philippines, are to be used in surveillance and patrol activities in the South China Sea. Another driver of the arms race across Asia is the North Korean nuclear dispute. North Korea has angered its neighbors and much of the world by carrying out a number of recent missile tests. American forces have already begun deploying the THAAD anti-missile system to South Korea. But Cooper says if North Korea continues its current path of fast missile and nuclear development, Japan and South Korea may eventually find the need to respond militarily.
In Japan, you might see some more forceful responses. There's been a growing debate about strike capability in Japan, basically developing capabilities that would give Japan the ability to respond to a North Korean missile attack. And this is a big change in Japanese defense posture, so it's something that folks should watch closely.
If approved, the government change would be historic in allowing Japan to strike overseas targets for the first time since World War II. Japan's ruling party has also urged Prime Minister Shinzo Abe's government to take steps to obtain its own missiles to counter North Korean threats. This would also be a big change for Japan, which in the past has heavily relied on its close ally, the United States, to protect it. But President Donald Trump has been critical of too much overseas military funding and even threatened to pull U.S. troops out of Japan if Tokyo does not agree to pay more of the costs. I'm Brian Lynn.
Researchers in the African country of Niger have introduced a new vaccine that protects against the diarrheal disease called rotavirus. A scientific test has shown that the new vaccine is effective, safe, and easy to use. Experts believe it will be more widely used than the two rotavirus vaccines now given to children. The new vaccine is important because rotavirus is a serious illness that can lead to death. Rotavirus causes a severe infection in the gastrointestinal tract. It kills more than 215,000 children each year, about 600 a day. Two vaccines against rotavirus are already available. However, they are costly and difficult to use. They must also be kept cold. In many African countries where people suffer from rotavirus, refrigeration and electricity are unreliable. As a result, the existing rotavirus vaccines are not widely used. Researchers have been working on a new vaccine for rotavirus called BRVPV. They recently tested the vaccine with young children in Niger. Researchers gave 1,780 babies the BRVPV vaccine. Only 31 cases of rotavirus developed in those babies. In contrast, 87 cases of rotavirus developed among the babies who received a treatment but did not get the real medicine. In other words, those babies were given a placebo. The researchers say the clinical trial shows that BRVPV was nearly 67% effective. The study was published in the New England Journal of Medicine. Dr. Emmanuel Barrault is the director of Epicenter, a research group that is part of Doctors Without Borders, an aid group. Epicenter researchers conducted the clinical trial.
We saw actually three things. The first is that this vaccine is efficient. The second is that this vaccine is safe, and we also saw a good acceptability by both the care providers and the families.
The new vaccine does not need refrigeration for up to 6 months. Medical workers mix it with liquid and give it to babies 3 times, when they are 6 weeks old, 10 weeks old, and 14 weeks old. Barrault is happy the new vaccine is effective, but he wishes the success or efficacy rate was even higher.
We would love to have 95, 98% of efficacy, but we know that all vaccines do not work very well in African countries for reasons that are still unclear, probably due to immunological disorders. But we also know that this efficacy of about 70% is higher than any other vaccine in similar settings.
The vaccine is expected to cost $6 for the 3 doses. The price will likely drop as more people are given the vaccine. Barrault says medical workers in countries where rotavirus is a serious health threat are waiting for the World Health Organization to approve the vaccine. Then medical workers can start giving the new vaccine to children. I'm Anne Ball.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Andrew Jackson, the seventh president, was unlike the earlier U.S. presidents. His family was poor, he had little education, and he lived on what was then the western part of the country. Jackson became nationally known in the early 1800s, first as a fighter against Native American tribes, and then as a general in the War of 1812 against the British. His image as a military hero and man of the people made him a popular choice for the presidency. But critics said Jackson did not accept any limits on his power. He is also remembered for supporting slavery and for forcing Native Americans from their homes. Andrew Jackson's parents were immigrants from Ireland. His father died in an accident before Andrew, the third and youngest son, was born. When the American colonies entered a war of independence, Andrew and his two brothers fought against the British, although Andrew was too young to be a regular soldier. Andrew's oldest brother soon died. Then Andrew and his other brother were both captured by British soldiers. One cut Andrew's face, leaving a scar that remained his entire life. But Andrew, unlike his brother, survived captivity. A short time later, Andrew's mother became sick and died. By age 15, Andrew Jackson had no living immediate family. He had already stopped attending school, but taught himself enough to become a lawyer. He moved to what became Nashville, Tennessee, where he developed a successful law career. In time, he bought land and slaves. Jackson was tall and thin, with red hair and bright blue eyes. Sometimes Jackson was playful. He loved to dance, hold parties, and play games where he could win money. Sometimes he was violent. He was known for getting angry easily. Jackson fought duels with several men. In one, he killed a man who insulted his wife. Yet many people liked Jackson's passionate, action-first personality. By the time the United States entered the War of 1812, Jackson had been a congressman, senator, and judge. Jackson did not have any officially recognized military training, but during the War of 1812, he volunteered in the Tennessee Militia and quickly took control of troops. Many of his soldiers came to respect him. Jackson refused to give up, even when the government ordered the militia to disband, and when some of the men wanted to leave, he threatened them with a gun. Because he was uncompromising and strong as a tree, soldiers called Jackson Old Hickory. A group of Creek Indians gave him another name. After he defeated them in battle, Jackson negotiated a treaty that punished both his Native American enemies and his Native American allies. The treaty was more severe than the U.S. government had asked. In time, it forced the Creeks, as well as several other tribes, off their land. The move was popular with many white settlers. It was less popular with the Creeks, who called Jackson Sharp Knife. His best-known military operation was in New Orleans, Louisiana. A large, experienced army of British soldiers moved to attack. Jackson defended the city with a small group of untrained soldiers. His group included volunteers, free blacks, Creoles, Native Americans, and pirates. Jackson's ragtag troops not only defeated the British force, but suffered only a few losses. Jackson didn't know that the battle came after the British and Americans had already agreed to end the war. But his victory there gave many Americans a feeling of pride. It also made Jackson famous. He became known across the country as the hero of New Orleans. Voters across the country supported Jackson, too. He was especially well-liked in the South and West. Many Americans saw him as a man of the people. They believed his success came from experience and hard work, not wealth and family connections. In the presidential election of 1824, Jackson received more popular and electoral votes than any of the other candidates. But because no candidate had a majority, lawmakers in the House of Representatives decided the election. Those lawmakers chose John Quincy Adams, the son of former President John Adams. They were persuaded, in part, because a leader in Congress named Henry Clay said Jackson did not have the temperament to be president. Immediately after Quincy Adams won, he appointed Clay Secretary of State. The appointment angered Jackson. He believed Adams and Clay had entered into a corrupt bargain. In the next presidential election 4 years later, Jackson defeated Quincy Adams in a landslide. And in the presidential election after that, he crushed Henry Clay. Jackson wanted to be a powerful leader who controlled a limited federal government, but he wanted that government to have power over state governments. For example, Jackson refused to let the state of South Carolina nullify, or ignore, a federal law that state officials opposed. Jackson said, if they failed to obey the law, he would consider them traitors and send in troops. In time, South Carolina and Congress were able to reach a compromise on the law. Jackson also refused to extend the charter of the National Bank. He believed the bank helped industrialists and businesses more than farmers and settlers. His move was popular with many voters, especially farmers and settlers. But Jackson's opponents warned against the bank veto. They disagreed with his economic plan, and they objected to how he had operated outside of Congress. Senators censured Jackson for acting as if he did not have to follow the law. Jackson's supporters fought back. They removed the official criticism from the Senate records. Jackson vetoed more bills than the first six presidents combined. He actively worked for only one major law, the Indian Removal Act of 1830. Jackson believed Native Americans occupied land that should belong to white settlers. He also thought Native Americans would be destroyed or lose their culture to white people anyway. So he offered several tribes what appeared to be generous treaties to move onto land west of the Mississippi River. But the treaties were often unfair or illegal. The tribes who accepted rarely received the benefits Jackson promised them, and some tribes, such as the Cherokees, simply refused to go. Empowered by Jackson's Indian Removal Act, U.S. government officials eventually forced 15,000 Cherokees off their land. They were made to march over 1,600 kilometers. About 4,000 died on the march. It is remembered as the Trail of Tears. For white settlers, Jackson's Indian removal policies resulted in over 100,000 square kilometers of new land to farm. Thousands of cotton planters moved west with their enslaved workers. The Indian Removal Act served not only to aid an economic boom in cotton, but to spread slavery further in the United States. Jackson had no objections. In 1837, Jackson officially moved out of the White House, but he did not really leave the presidency. He advised the presidents who followed him from his home in Tennessee. Jackson had particular influence over two future leaders, Martin Van Buren, his former vice president, and James Polk, who shared Jackson's beliefs so closely that he was called Young Hickory. Jackson's beloved wife, Rachel, had died before he took office. They did not have any children together, but they raised two boys, a Native American orphan who died as a teenager, and a nephew, whom they called Andrew Jackson, Jr. The younger Andrew Jackson and his wife lived with the former president in his final years. He died in his bed at 78 of old wounds and old age, but his legacy remains very much alive. Jackson changed the U.S. presidency. After him, presidential candidates had to show they could connect with voters, not just lawmakers. He also increased the power of the chief executive. Jackson often questioned, or dismissed, the power of Congress, the Constitution, and the Supreme Court. And he began the custom of replacing experienced government officials with people whose main qualification was their loyalty to him. Critics added to Jackson's nicknames. They called him King Andrew, King Mob, or American Caesar. The opposition to Jackson led to a new political party called the Whigs. Part of Jackson's legacy is the two major party system that exists in the U.S. today. But those who loved Jackson really loved him. His humble beginnings, rise to power, and defense of the common man inspired them. In the U.S., the name of Andrew Jackson is still often used as a positive symbol of American democracy. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.